Well, welcome back to the Archaeology News Weekly. I'm David Connolly. After the excitement of last week, we now bring you Archaeology News 101. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details in each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And now, the main headlines from around the world are as follows. Ancient finds are uncovered in a British bus station. A henge is unearthed in the grounds of an Oxford college. And will Stonehenge Centre be ready for the 2012 Olympics? A Syrian settlement dating back to 5000 BCE is uncovered. And early irrigation farming is traced in ancient Yemen. Bronze Age cavemen and their modern-day relatives lived in the same area for at least 3,000 years. A prehistoric underwater forest is explored in Scotland, and Willamy Wilderness yields more of its ancient secrets. A 6,000-year-old knife is unearthed in Florida, and, still in America, they plunge underwater for the search for the first Americans. Construction damages a prehistoric site in Indiana. And finally, Bronze Age treasure is unearthed in Surrey by a metal detectorist. Stone Age pits containing tools and pottery have been uncovered during work on a new bus station in Warwickshire in England. The excavations at the new bus station in Warwick started in early June, and archaeologists said they had been impressed with the finds so far. Flints and decorated pots dating back 5,000 years have been found along with the remains of medieval streets. Council leaders said they hoped the finds would eventually go on display at the town's Market Hall Museum. Warwickshire County Council's environment spokesman Martin Heatley said that some of the finds at the site had been fascinating. Archaeologists excavating a mass grave in the grounds of an Oxford college in England uncovered what could be a monument dating back 5,000 years. The team unearthed between 30 and 40 bodies in the grounds of St. John's College in March and returned to the site to find more. They then found evidence of what they believed to be a 150-metre circular henge monument dating back to around 3,000 BCE. Henges are man-made non-defensive ditches possibly used for ritual or ceremonial purposes. Ambitious plans for a world-class visitor centre for Stonehenge may have dwindled to a world-class prefab, but both English Heritage and the government pledged it would be built in time for the 2012 Olympics. After over 20 years of bitter public debate, the proposed £57 million visitor centre collapsed last year when the government abandoned, on cost grounds, the plan for a tunnel for the A303, where it passes one of the world's most famous prehistoric monuments. Ordered by Culture Minister Margaret Hodge to sort the site in time for the expected Olympics tourism bonanza, English Heritage launched yet another public consultation, this time on a new quick-fix solution, a temporary building lasting up to 20 years, but costing up to £20 million and providing a cafe, shop and twice as much parking. It could be achieved either by drastically upgrading the present site, damned almost 20 years ago by a parliamentary committee as a national disgrace, or on one of four other sites scattered across the edge of the World Heritage Site. In most options, there would be a park and ride scheme, leaving visitors to walk the remaining 1.25 kilometres to the stones across a landscape, allowing viewing of other monuments completely overlooked by most visitors today. In every case, the A344 branch road, which passes within yards of the stone, would be closed and turfed over. "We have to do this. There's no alternative," said Lord Bruce Lockhart, chairman of English Heritage. The consultation closes in October. The results go to the government by the end of the year, and English Heritage will then invite design tenders. They hope to win planning permission next summer, start building in 2010, and finish well before the first starting pistols of the London Olympics. Between them, the people who attended launch in Amesbury have fought every single previous proposal. For the first time, there was cautious consensus that now work could just get going. "You may not get a perfect solution," Hodge said, "but you will get something which works a million times better than what we have at the present." Archaeologist Barry Cunliffe, now an English Heritage Commissioner who has been working at Stonehenge since 1974, said that this time he feels there's a real success within our grasp. Kate Fielden, also an archaeologist and local representative of the Campaign to Protect Rural England, said, "What we need now is to do something gentle, which will allow us to do something more and better later on." Wise advice, I say. Just stick up a porter cabin for a couple of hundred quid. A number of round buildings that are 8.5 meters high and dating back to 5000 BCE were discovered at Al-Hasaka, 750 kilometers northeast of Damascus in Syria. Abdul Masih Bagdo, head of the Al-Hasaka Archaeology Department, said that a temple that dates back to 2400 BCE was also discovered at the Tel Badar site, in addition to chambers on the eastern side of the temple that had decorated doors. Bagdo said that the archaeological expeditions at Al-Hasaka concluded their second stage, and added that several expeditions, including Russian, French, American Syrian, German Syrian, and Japanese expeditions, will be arriving at the site in the middle of August. I'm actually quite looking forward to going to Syria myself. When I'm off in Jordan in September, afterwards I'm going to pop up there, so I might come back with some live news from that site. In the remote desert highlands of southern Yemen, a team of archaeologists had discovered new evidence of ancient transitions from hunting and herding to irrigation and agriculture 5,200 years ago. As part of a larger program of archaeological research, Michael Harrower from the University of Toronto and the Roots of Agriculture in Southern Arabia team explored the Wadi Sana watershed, recording 174 ancient irrigation structures. They modelled topography and hydrology and interviewed contemporary herders and irrigation farmers. Agriculture in Yemen appeared relatively late in comparison with other areas of the Middle East, where farming first developed near the end of the last ice age, around about 12,000 years ago. And their findings show farming in southern Yemen required runoff diversion technologies that were adapted to harness monsoon runoff from the rugged terrain, along with new understanding of social landscapes and also the rights to scarce water resources. The researchers used computer geographic information system mapping to determine that ancient forager herders developed expert knowledge of hydrology and targeted particularly small watersheds and landforms for irrigation. Studies of contemporary land and water rights suggest their origins lie at the very beginnings of water management. These and other discoveries in southern Arabia have recently helped document the diversity of transitions from foraging to agriculture that in Yemen later gave rise to powerful ancient cities and states with advanced irrigation technologies that transformed deserts into lush and bountiful oases. Two Germans share the longest proven family tree in the world. The men, Manfred Hochthausen and Uwe Lange, have known each other from living in the same village, but they never knew that they were related through a 3,000-year-old shared ancestor. They only recently found out that they are both descendants of Bronze Age cave dwellers who lived in the area 3 millennia ago. Thanks to a DNA test on well-preserved Bronze Age bones found in the Lichtensteinhöhle cave in the foots of the Harz Mountain in Germany's Lower Saxony, the men can now claim to have the longest family tree in the world. Before the discovery, he could trace his ancestry back to 1550, but now he's able to go back 120 generations. A local team of archaeologists discovered the Lichtensteinhöhle cave, which has been hidden from view, in 1980, but it wasn't until 1993 that they found the Bronze Age remains. The cave was used between 1000 and 700 BCE, according to archaeological investigations conducted by scientists at the nearby University of Göttingen. They found the bones of 23 people, 9 females and 14 males, along with what appeared to be cult objects, prompting speculation among scientists that the cave was a living area and a sacrificial burial place. The remains turned out to be from the same family group that had a distinctive and rare DNA pattern. And when 300 locals were tested with saliva swabs as part of the archaeological research, two residents turned out to have exactly the same genetic characteristics. Just goes to show you that most people didn't actually travel too far from where they started. Underwater archaeologists are taking to Loch Tay in Perthshire in Scotland to try and uncover more about a submerged prehistoric woodland landscape. The stumps of about 50 trees were discovered in 2005, and some of them are thought to be around 6,000 years old. Meanwhile, a campaign has been launched to help restore the reconstructed Crannog, an ancient loch dwelling which attracts thousands of visitors every year. The Scottish Trust for Underwater Archaeology will spend the next 2 weeks inspecting the drowned forest, and will be focusing on two trees, one dating from 4,270 BCE and the other from about 2,350 BCE. And they will be taking samples of the sediment and organic materials to establish if there were any landslips taking place between the Mesolithic and the Bronze Ages. The Scottish Crannog Centre near Aberfeldy, which is visited by an estimated 25,000 people every year, is urgently in need of money to refurbish the reconstructed Iron Age home on the loch. When they started building in 1994, it was all very experimental, using authentic materials. So no pile drivers, no waterproofing, no weatherproofing, and no creosote. In fact, no modern techniques at all were used. It was done just the way it would have been done in the past. They even used the same species as ancient people did, mainly alder. But they would have liked to have used more oak, because there was oak in the original Crannog house. But obviously oak is expensive, and what they've discovered since is that alder doesn't last very long in the water, because the most exposed parts of the timbers, where the loch level rises and falls between winter and summer, are heavily eroded. Staff will be now looking at ways of naturally protecting the structure, and are being advised by some Polish specialists. If you're ever in the area of Perthshire, apart from popping in and meeting me, I would highly recommend that you go up to this Crannog Centre. Other places to go, of course, are the Archaeolink up in Aberdeenshire and Kilmartin, but there's many, many places to go in Scotland, he hastens to add. There's a ridge and creek in the heart of the 500,000-hectare Wollemi Wilderness in New South Wales, Australia, that is so remote that they have never been officially named by Europeans. An archaeologist, Wayne Brennan, and his colleagues have called these wild features Forgotten Ridge and Forgotten Creek, and have just completed the first archaeological survey there. They've uncovered six archaeological sites, including a rock shelter with about 100 drawings and stencils. A party of bushwalkers, Rick Deveridge, Mark Jessop and Michael Cartier, had discovered three rock art sites and on their return contacted Mr. Brennan. They reported an ancestral figure drawn with charcoal, either a half-man, half-goanna, or someone wearing an elaborate headdress. A few kilometres away they also found another strange motif, possibly a half-rat, half-woman, and two ancient red ochre hand and arm stencils. At the third site, they found more than 30 axe-grinding grooves. Mr. Brennan, who along with Paul Tacon and Dr. Matthew Kelleher, have spent the last 5 years searching the Wollemi for its secret prehistory, quickly set about getting to the unexplored area themselves. Past discoveries in the wilderness area have included thousands of charcoal and ochre drawings, a one-hectare rock platform named Gallery Rock covered in engravings, and two rare stone axes, as well as a number of timber tools including fire sticks. The following day, the bushwalkers guided Mr. Brennan into a rainforest and under a series of overhangs. Coming around a corner was a large rock shelter, and on the wall was a suspected goanna man. Professor Tacon, a Griffith University rock art expert, said he believed the reptilian head was probably an elaborate headdress. Near the rock shelter, with the rat woman, is a deep pool with huge round boulders on the creek bed. In the rock shelter, the rat woman charcoal drawing has badly deteriorated, though. While Mr. Brennan and other archaeologists recorded details of the finds, the others set off to scour more unexplored country in search of archaeology. The walkers discovered a further four more sites, including a rock shelter with as many as 100 motifs on its walls. They found a stencil of a child's boomerang, children's hand stencils, and stencils of two of the biggest hands anyone had ever yet seen. There was also a mysterious figure with numerous heads and large numbers of human figurines. Proper recording of the sites will have to wait until another expedition. I must admit, this is a sort of archaeology I'd love to get involved in. There's just so much to be found and shared in Australia. It started out as a simple plan to erect a pavilion-like shelter at Safety Harbor in Florida, but it became an archaeological dig. A city crew erecting a shelter stumbled upon an old chert blade, and archaeologists soon confirmed it as 6 to 8,000 years old. Plans to put up a shelter were briefly put on hold as various members of the Safety Harbor Museum of Regional History decided to treat the area as an archaeological dig. The 4-inch chert knife was likely used by the Tocobaga Indians, and the edges were still razor sharp. The museum is expected now to ask the city for permission to dig in another area of the park to see whether they can piece together the life of the knife. C. Andrew Hemmings, research associate of the Texas Archaeological Research Laboratory at the University of Texas in Austin, will lead an underwater archaeological expedition in the Gulf of Mexico to search for submerged evidence of the first Americans. Hemmings and James Adovasio, director of Mercyhurst College Archaeological Institute, who serves as co-principal investigator on the project, will be studying ancient submerged coastlines in the northeastern Gulf to determine where early Americans, known as the Clovis culture, might have lived more than 12,000 years ago, when the underwater terrain was in fact dry land. Before heading inland, Paleo-Indians probably hugged the American coastline, congregating around freshwater rivers. At the time, much of the world's water was locked up in glaciers, causing ocean levels to be lower and exposing more of the continental shelf. As the earth warmed and the water levels rose, evidence of such settlements fell deeper and deeper beneath the waves. There's no question in almost all archaeological minds that the earliest examples of North American occupation will be found underwater. The study's findings will contribute to our understanding of early humans in North America, including the timings of their arrival, their lifestyles and migration patterns, and could add further proof that the peopling of the Western Hemisphere was a lengthier and more complicated process than is typically believed. About an acre of one of Illinois' most significant prehistoric sites was destroyed by bulldozing recently. Located a mile or so from Lebanon's bricked and antique shop-lined main thoroughfare, the Pfeffer site has been listed for more than 20 years on the U.S. National Register of Historic Places. But in late June, almost an acre of artifact-rich topsoil was destroyed when a bulldozer scraped it all away during the building of a road and house construction site. The site level has been taken down a foot to expose features from the Mississippian era, including the tops of more than 20 debris-filled midden pits, prime areas for archaeological study. This is a very important site from the beginnings of the Cahokia period. The Cahokia Mounds State Historic Site is only 50 miles to the northwest. The people of the Pfeffer site probably helped build the mound city itself, and the destruction is a significant loss. A civil lawsuit may be filed against the developer, Thomas Bau. Well, I'm glad to hear about that, because that was just needless and wanton destruction. A coroner has ruled that a hoard of ancient bronze ingots found on farmland near Dorking in Surrey, England, are treasure. Nick Green, who's a member of the East Surrey Search and Recovery Group, unearthed the rare find while metal detecting at a farm near Betchworth in January this year. Realising the significance, Mr. Green made a note of the location using his handheld GPS and then immediately reported to the Surrey County Council's find liaison officer David Williams, who arranged for a small excavation of the area. The 8 bronze fragments, which were contained in a pottery vessel, were taken to the British Museum for further analysis and are believed to originate from the late Bronze Age between 1000 and 800 BCE. It's hoped that Mr. Green's finds will be lodged at Guildford Museum. And I'd just like to say thank you very much, Mr. Green, because if it hadn't been for you, we wouldn't have this, and you did exactly all the right things. If you find something, always try and locate it as accurately as possible and report it as soon as you can to either a local archaeologist, or if you're lucky enough to be in Britain, to the Portable Antiquities Scheme. Well, it just goes for me to say thanks very much for listening to Issue 101. And if you are interested in archaeology, heritage and conservation, then why not have a look at the new Past Horizons online magazine? It's like nothing you've ever seen before, using all the latest technology for page flip. You'll find that at www.pasthorizons.com/magazine. And can I remind people that many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as a UK heritage calendar, library and guidance section, can be found on Badger. That's www.bajr.org. We also both have blogs, so if you just Google it away, you'll check for Badger blog, BAJR blog, or Past Horizons blog, where you can keep up to date with what's going on. And if you want to keep up with what's going on in the Stone Pages, then go to news.stonepages.com. Thanks very much for listening to the Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you'll return to us again next week.